97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Looking forward to Sue's news here in a little bit. Yeah, you heard the news there. Ozzy Osbourne has died after his farewell show. He was 76 years old. Family put out that statement. It was more sadness than mere words can convey that we have to report that our beloved Ozzy Osbourne has passed away this morning. So we'll talk to former Keishi DJ about that next hour at this time. I think that'll be an interesting conversation, the legacy of Ozzy Osbourne. He's known mostly for mumbling things, at least in the modern generations, but this guy was a force of music. I think he might be a two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer with Black Sabbath and then himself individually, if I had to guess. I don't know that for sure. I haven't looked that up, but I feel like that would be the case. Oh, he is, yeah. I would say that was a pretty easy bet because even his solo career was fantastic, the things that he put out there. At least in my rock and roll days, I don't listen to much of that anymore. Was that Crazy Train I heard a hint of? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot of famous songs that he wrote. So, good old Ozzy Osbourne. I think a lot of people forget that TV show, how popular it was back when MTV was airing it. I think it was or VH1, one of the two. I think it was MTV. Yeah,
oh, I thought it was MTV. Oh, now I have to look it up.
We actually have a clip that Fred pulled from it also, if we want
to
play that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it. I got to.
Weak signal, that's about all. I don't know what's that weak signal. Jack! Can you get this this television to work?
I'm a very simple man. You gotta have like computer knowledge to turn the TV on and off.
Yeah,
Dad having a hard time.
It was MTV 2002 to 2005, and it was entertaining, but it was one giant bleep.
Yeah. And it was such a big cultural thing, too. Everyone watched it and, you know, became a catchphrase with the Sharon thing. It was funny. Kind of showed it behind the scenes. Not everyone could do that. I don't know if you've seen Alec Baldwin. I think his wife has a reality show. And Alec Baldwin is the most boring person on the planet in this stupid, stupid reality show. It's some actors. They're told what to do and they're very good at portraying the emotion that's written on a script for them. But when they are in real life and they're unscripted, they are the stupidest, dumbest, boring people you could ever meet. And you wonder, why would anyone watch this? That's the Alec Baldwin portion of his wife's reality show.
Well, his wife seems like a piece of work. I have no desire to watch anything she's in. Am I right?
Yeah. No, I think you're 100% right. I don't know why. But people apparently think that's a package deal. Oh, we get a little Alec Baldwin with this. No. Anytime he's on there, it's just such a letdown. Not that I've watched. I've only seen clips of how boring it is, people making fun of it. You know, talking about people being bored and making fun, Stephen Colbert is out talking about the decision to cancel The Late Show. And he said, this is the claim he makes. He makes the claim that the only reason why people know how much the show was losing is because CBS leaked that in order to justify their decision for canceling him. And I thought to myself, okay, now, when it comes to a lot of the people that back him in the super far left plus the liberal politicians that used his show as a way to, you know, get their message out there, I thought, okay, yes, I can see why you're sad the show is going, but does the general person really feel like this is a loss? And probably not. Does the general person realize the show is losing $40 million a year? And if you are in a job where you are constantly losing, and it's because of you, the host of the show, are losing $40 million a year, and you talk about how stupid your boss is as you are losing $40 million a year, do you think that may have contributed? Possibly.
Oh, gosh. It's all so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. Well, they had a reaction, liberal media reaction to the Colbert cancellation. Ethan, can we play clip number 11 on this one? I think we got time for it. Just this one.
It's terrible because you had the settlement with Donald Trump, and then you had Colbert and Jon Stewart criticizing that decision. And then a week later, they're saying, oh, unfortunately, we don't have the money to continue this. This just makes it look completely connected with the 60 Minutes settlement.
Obviously, President Trump has made no secret of his hatred of being mocked, specifically the jokes that people like Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel make at his expense?
There is not a snowball's chance in hell. There is not politics behind this. I simply don't believe it.
This has not been a great week for free speech and speaking truth to power.
This is textbook authoritarian rule.
That just drives me nuts. $40 million, idiots.
You know, so you have, and I think the numbers were basically, you have Colbert that was getting about 1.8 million viewers a week, something like that. You had Greg Gutfeld, by the way, I think the last one came out was 3.1 million total viewers. You have 200 people working on the Colbert show, and they're losing $40 million a year. You have like a dozen non-union workers on Greg Gutfeld's show. Doesn't cost nearly as much. They're not paying as much. They're making money. It's more successful. And you have CBS looking at this and saying, why are we backing the 40 million loser? It's so bad they're even canceling the late night show. It's not just him. They're canceling the whole thing. He ruined that franchise. So I think that needs to be said, that I understand why some of these people are upset. But don't worry. You still have all the other late night talk show hosts that you can go on to. I'm sure Jimmy Kimmel will pick up your slack. So if you're really worried about Stephen Colbert going away, don't worry. Jimmy Kimmel will take all of the Democrat surrogates come election time. All right, coming up after the break, let's do Sue's News. I'm really looking forward to that. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Saw that Pam Bondi is going to meet with Ghislaine Maxwell. That's an interesting twist to all of this. Let's see if anything comes with it. But, you know, like I mentioned before, it's never too late to change course. If you're Donald Trump, he's done it a few times where he realizes something's wrong. Time to switch gears, and if there could be a switching of gears going on there, I wouldn't just dismiss this whole Epstein's thing right away. I also saw that Barack Obama came out with a statement saying that he's denying all these allegations that are coming out. Tulsi Gabbard and Donald Trump, kind of interesting. More things we're going to be seeing how they develop out. All right, let's do some Sue's News.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Good news, it's National Hammock Day. Have you ever had a hammock, Fred?
No.
You turn that down. That's...
No.
Sorry. Thank you. No?
No, I've slept in one, but never had one.
Wait, how'd you sleep in one?
Over at a friend's house.
Wait, like the night?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay. No. I was like, "That. Let's put Fred on the hammock." And I'm thinking, dang, that's harsh. Have you had one, Ethan? You the hammock person?
We had one. We had one at one point in our little back patio area, and I really liked it. I enjoyed it. The only problem was, is like where it was, a lot of wasp nests around there.
Ooh.
So you kind of were like, I don't know.
I always thought I'm hard to get in or out of.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are a lot of bulldog memes involving hammocks.
Oh, I bet.
Yes. That would have been entertaining. But other than that, no. What about you, Ryan?
Yep. The family, we got one. My wife purchased this freestanding hammock, so she'll hook on the actual hammock part, and she'll unhook it when she's not using it. The kids love it. They'll go out there and read books and stuff.
Oh, now that's nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's kind of cute. It's also National Mango Day. I just saw them in Schnucks for 99 cents. I'm passing that along. I didn't get one, but I thought about it, Fred. Mm. You know. Okay. Now, this song, we're going to play this for you. This is ABBA. It's Gimme, 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 A Man After Midnight. Let's hear a little. This thing has reached 1 billion, with a B, streams on Spotify.
Wow.
It was released in 1979. It was the only new song on ABBA's Greatest Hits, Volume 2. I love it.
Way to hit the post.
Well, kind of. But it wasn't released as a single in the U.S. or Canada. And here's what they think. That was the end of disco, when that guy up in Chicago was having you bring the albums and destroy them. So they never,
Dolman?
Yeah, they never released it in the U.S. and Canada, but it was huge in other countries. And apparently Gen Zers love this song.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we got it.
Woo!
Woo!
What a missed opportunity for ABBA.
Uh-oh.
I mean, if they are burning albums and destroying them, if you would have released this being maybe one of the top disco bands, people would have bought it to destroy it. You'd have sold 1 million extra copies just for people to destroy.
That is true. Fred, you look thoughtful.
Oh, I am. I don't think I even knew this song.
What? You didn't see Mamma Mia? The musical?
No, I haven't seen the musical.
Oh, Fred, that's why I haven't
seen Mamma Mia either, but I know this song from, let's see. It got really big on social media in the last few years.
Yes.
And the famous vlogger David Dobrik, he used this in a lot of his videos.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is an awesome song. And there's also a super popular remix to it. Which is actually the version I was more familiar with. But that is where this song is just absolutely just completely blown up again here in the last couple of years.
I think that's interesting. Well, Fred, I thought you went to all the stuff at the Fox. That's why I figured you would have heard
I missed that one.
Okay. Yeah, and that's when, what's her name? Meryl Streep was singing it in the movie. It wasn't that. I don't know if she sang that song. I love Meryl Streep. Perhaps she's not the strongest singer ever. All right. Southwest Airlines has announced that the day it will officially begin assigned seating will be January 27th of 2026. I think that will be a really good day to not fly Southwest while they figure that out. Can you imagine?
I think Southwest on that day becomes like every other airline.
Oh, I think it's terrible. But, you know, that's what they're doing. Between this and charging for bags, right. You're right. It's hard to recognize them anymore. I think that part of the reason people fly, or at least I do, is a little less expensive and a little more laid back, and I don't have to pay for bags.
Right.
And I know they're leaving money on the table, but will this make up for it, or will it just put them in line with everyone else and then we won't care? Do you think they will suffer for it, Ryan, or is it just, you know?
I am a budget flyer. I'll do the Spirit every day.
Spirit?
Every day.
Spirit?
Love Spirit Airlines.
Listen, there's a, to a certain extent, when you book with Spirit Airlines, you know, there is a little bit more life risk that you're putting into your flight.
Thank you, Ethan.
Oh,
We're all thinking it.
I'll tell you what, whenever there's a plane that flips upside down or something, a near miss, it's never a Spirit airline. Ever.
Huh. Yeah, because half the time they don't even take off because they got maintenance issues.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. And a 15-year-old is flying the plane. Okay. That's probably why. Well, we figured that out. Mystery solved. Mike and I are flying Southwest to Cleveland on Thursday. But see, here's the other part that we're going to miss. You set your alarm so that you could check in.
24 hours
before.
Yes. Yeah.
All the fun is being taken right out of it.
Well, you still have to do that, right?
Well, now I do before January 27, 2026. No, you'll have an assigned seat.
But I thought that the assigned seats were based off of... I still thought it was based off of first come, first serve. You don't get to choose your seat on the app?
You got
to
choose your seat when you buy the ticket. You sit in A3, and that's where you are. So no need to line up or you just go to your seat when you get there.
Oh, because I think like with Delta or some others, you can, if you check in early, you get a better spot
for more money.
Yeah, but not always. If there's certain available, you can click on which ones you want, I thought.
This is
not the case.
Seating.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that does suck because I was thinking it was the other thing that I just mentioned before.
I don't think so.
Not ideal.
No. Southwest, by the way, has been around for 54 years with non-assigned seating, so it really will be an adjustment. Spirit, where do you take that, Ryan?
Everywhere. Anywhere that Spirit goes. We just use Spirit to go down to Disney for Orlando.
Oh, wow. It
probably saved us $500.
Did it really? All right. Well, that's pretty impressive. Okay, what do they strip down? Do they just not give you, like, peanuts or something? What's the difference?
They don't give you anything. It's like stadium seating in there. So, basically, you have to wear all of your clothes for the entire trip so you can try not to carry a bag on. And then you get in there. And then, you know, the seats are pretty comfortable, but it's like stadium seating, essentially. And, you know, they don't hassle you. Nothing. There's no problems. You get in, you get out. That's what people are there for. They know the deal.
So you got no drinks. Not that I want drinks, but no, you know, is there any service of any kind? Or you're just sitting there in all your clothes?
You can buy it. I mean, you can buy whatever you want. They'll bring the cart around, but they won't give you anything for free.
Okay.
Not even a chance of free.
Not even a chance of free.
Mm-hmm.
All right. One of the largest studies on a 32-hour, four-day work week has been completed. Now, we've heard about this a little bit now and then. They'll talk about it. But this is the largest one that's been done. And Boston College scientists were at the helm. And for 6 months, they tracked workers at over 140 businesses in the U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, and the U.K. About 3,000 workers. By the way, it's a 32-hour work week, but you get no pay cut. You still get paid what you're getting paid now. Like, it's 40. The findings? Workers said they had less burnout, greater job satisfaction compared to the five-day workers. They even said they got better sleep and reported better mental and physical health. Here's what I hadn't realized. The five-day work week only became commonplace after the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. So it's only been a thing since 1938, which I had no idea.
So was it a six-day week?
I'm not sure.
Or a four-day week?
And after the study, 90% of the participating companies adopted the four-day work week. That's how well it went for the company and for the employee.
So they weren't losing money.
Correct.
So they're, I guess the case for it is right, is that they're having 32 hours are more productive.
Yes, because they're excited about having that other day off.
Interesting.
And I think there are probably certain companies or certain industries for which this would really work, and then others that wouldn't.
How about radio?
That's one that would not. I'm sorry. That's why we're not flying Spirit Airlines.
Well, not for stations like this where you're live and you're doing shows. A lot of music stations, they record anyway, so they could probably get away with it.
No, that's probably true. Oh, and a new study found that 13 is the minimum age kids should get their first smartphone or be allowed on social media. Ryan, you've got kids getting closer, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, we got a 10-year-old, and for Christmas this year, we got him basically a GPS watch for kids. So you can only message people that are approved by the parents, so he can call for an emergency. But the big thing is the GPS means we can track wherever he's at. So, you know, if he's in school, we see him at school. If he's at a friend's house, whatever. It's more for emergencies than it is a smartwatch. I don't think I'm going to let him have it until he's 21, a real one.
Good luck with that. Fred, when do the boys get it? Do you remember?
They were in their mid-teens.
I think that's smarter. Yeah. They say that any younger than 13 risks their future mental health. And they don't go, they say, it. You know, they could get depressed, aggressive, emotionally unstable by their mid-20s if you let them have it younger.
I'll wait as long as possible.
Good. You're still
as
waiting.
As long as possible.
Yeah. Yes. It's just terrible. Okay. And finally in Sue's news, I love it when I learn things. Okay. The opposite of paranoia is called pronoia. And it's the belief that everyone's involved in a secret conspiracy to help you.
Oh, I love that.
I love that. Isn't that great?
That's a fantastic podcast name. Love Sue's News. You learn things like that.
That would be awesome.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk.
On the right-hand side, you probably saw the airplane kind of sort of coming at us. Nobody told us about it. Sorry about the aggressive maneuver. It caught me by surprise. This is not normal at all. I don't know why they didn't give us a heads up, because the Air Force base does have radar. Long story short, it was not fun, but I do apologize for it, and thank you for understanding. It was kind of really, not a fun day at work.
All right, that was the announcement the pilot made to the souls on Jet Flight 3788. Joining us now is retired from the U.S. Air Force, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Well, you're an airline or airplane captain, and you worked for many different years. At the very end, you heard the pilot say, "This is not normal." We've seen a lot of these reported as of late. Would you agree this is not normal?
Well, it's absolutely not normal, but I have flown into airports like that. I hate to say out in the middle of nowhere, but my knot, North Dakota, is way up in the north central part, so there's just not a lot of traffic. And so everybody's kind of relaxed and whatnot. And this thing was just absolutely bad timing. It couldn't have been worse.
Okay, so you were a pilot with Delta Airlines 37 years. You're the author of My Life Above the Clouds. So how often do bad timings happen? Because it just seems like the frequency continues to increase the last year.
I know it seems like that, but in my career, it was so seldom. You know, I flew into these airports. They're unusual because they're what they call VFR, visual flight rules. And so the pilot goes in and lands. There is air traffic control, but it's only on the radio. There's not radar. They're not clearing you. They're not giving you 2 mile separations and that sort of thing. So they cleared the Delta airplane in, and he's got to be VFR. He's got to be flying visually. They cleared the B-52 to do the flyby. He's also got to be VFR and visual. And the timing was just unbelievable that they got that close together. They should have not even been in the same airspace. But that's just one of those unlucky things. And thank goodness the Delta pilot was visual. He saw it and he turned and avoided.
Yeah. So when it comes to the air traffic controllers, the Air Force has come out and they said, they're to blame, the air traffic controllers. Does the Air Force and the B-52 bomber, do they have some responsibility here too?
You know, this is my opinion, of course, but I don't think so. I think the B-52 did everything. They had to, you know, they're talking to their people up there at Minot Air Base, but then they switched them over to the VHF frequency there at the Minot Airport. And so they're talking to the controllers, but the controllers don't have radar. So they cleared them to do their flyby, completely visual. And then the Delta airplane did the same thing, checked in with tower, got cleared to land, but still completely visual. And that they got that close together was just a one in a million situation. The controller really could not have controlled it. He could have mentioned it to Delta. He could have said, you know, look for a B-52 bomber. And if you see one, maybe turn and avoid it or something. But he didn't mention that.
Mm-hmm. Take me into the cockpit for a second, because as a modern day pilot, I was under the impression that with the instruments and the computers and the autopilot, really, you only have to step in if something's going wrong once you're up flying in the air. And then you're just taking control during liftoff and then landing. Is that true?
Well, not in this circumstance. Usually in a commercial flight, you take off, you put it on autopilot. You have to be visual until you get above 18,000 feet. And then you just go totally instrument if you want to. This is okay. A totally different situation. They're down. They're at low altitude. There could have been light airplanes. Like I said, it's see and avoid. So everybody has to be looking. But I can put a different angle on the B-52 because if you think about it, they're doing a flyby over a sporting event. You remember the football games. You watch the NFL. Mm-hmm. They do the national anthem. And right at the last note, the airplane flies over the field. That mm-hmm. takes a lot of timing. That's not accidental.
Oh, interesting. Joining us is Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell. He's retired, but U.S. Air Force. He was a airline captain with Delta Airlines 37 years. What was your first year working with Delta?
Well, it was like a gazillion years ago. I flew on the Boeing 727, and they didn't have any of this radar and control. Everything was pretty wide open. And, you know, over the years, it's just gotten way more complicated and way more under control. And I think that maybe affects these pilots because you're ready for tower to give you some instruction or a controller to tell you to go around. And so when you're completely VFR, that's 100% on you. That's a little bit different nowadays. And I think that might have gotten them a little bit in trouble.
So let's say the training that you first received versus what a new airline pilot may receive. Do you think that, you know, the kind of the way things used to be, you were more hands-on, you had to, I guess, pay more attention because you didn't have all the gadgets and the gizmos like you have today. Do you think that maybe that would have better trained you for instances like this to see this? And maybe some of the new pilots are just getting too comfortable with the technology and perhaps they are relying on it when maybe someone like you that started decades ago would have relied on your instincts and your eyes.
That's an excellent point. I was also an instructor. So when I went with the airline, I'd been an instructor in the Air Force. I'd been an instructor in civilian life. So I was used to being the man what's in charge. And so I wouldn't just be sitting there listening to instructions, looking at instruments. I'd be looking out the windows. I'd be looking for different things. I'd be aware. And I think that would have helped me. And I think that maybe affects some commercial pilots nowadays that don't have that kind of background. They get in the simulator. They're always on the instruments. They're flying IFR. So when they get in a visual situation like this, they're a little behind the power curve.
Yeah. Was there smoking on planes when you started flying?
Absolutely. And you close the door and have three pilots in a 727. It is horrible. I have some really bad memories of that. And when they stopped doing that, it made my day.
Oh, I know. Well, our producer, Fred, he worked with someone that smoked. And this is back when you can do that inside of a radio station back in the day. You can't do that anywhere anymore. I'm sure a lot of things have changed over the years based on where you were and where it is today. Have you ever had any, at least from your own experiences, close calls, scary moments up in the air?
You know, not in the airline. I flew for Delta for 37 years. I never even had a flat tire. I'm probably one of the luckiest pilots on this planet when you hear about all these accidents. None of that ever happened to me. But I also think because of my background and my variety of military flying, civilian flying, and commercial flying, that I just had a different perspective. I was more aware, more alert. I wouldn't let the other pilot pull something on me like that situation that happened where the 787 engines quit. That would have never happened to me. I would not have allowed that. And so, you know, things, I don't know, I was very lucky to have that kind of perspective for the years that I flew, and it just made it much more beneficial and much safer.
The movie Airplane, was that good or bad for your industry as a pilot?
Oh, it was a hoot. You know, people don't take things like that serious. And the jokes, that you have to see that movie three times to get all the jokes. It was just incredibly well done.
You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So many great moments in that. Well, you know, you have a book called My Life Above the Clouds. If people wanted to check it out, where can they go?
Just go to Amazon.com and type in My Life Above the Clouds. And I tell people, I didn't write the book to make a lot of money. I wrote the book to tell people what I did and what they can do, because I'm not special. But I just made some good choices, didn't do drugs, didn't get arrested, and just kept going for it. And it worked out beautifully for me. So I want parents to give this book to their kids and say, read this and give it some thought about what you want to be when you grow up. And it could make a huge difference in their life.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And people wanted to look it up. Is there a website or just go to like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, places like that?
Just Amazon.com. You know, Amazon's got a gazillion books, but if you go to Amazon.com and just type in My Life Above the Clouds, it'll pop right up.
Yep. Have you tried any of these modern simulators or VR goggles for flying?
No, I'm not into that. I used to be a simulator instructor, so that's one of those burnout experiences where, you know, been there, done that. It would be fun to do it. I would like to get in a simulator, you know, if I had some other people and I could just do some flying and maybe do some showing off or something. But I flew so many years and did so much flying that that's just, I don't know, hate to say it's boring, but I've kind of burned out on that.
Yeah, I guess if you're Tiger Woods and someone asks you if you want to go to the simulator, you're like, I've done enough of that in my career. I think I can give it a pass for today. Okay, well, my life. Oh, go ahead.
I did have one interesting experience. I took somebody up in the 727 in a simulator, and I landed in the grass beside the Atlanta airport. And, you know, you look at that and like, ah, we're going to die. But you can do that in a simulator. You can land on the interstate. You can land on the pond. So it's pretty cool to do that just to show off.
Yeah, I know. And there's the Microsoft simulators. And I think the first thing anyone does in St. Louis is they try to fly through the arch. You get in so much trouble, but you can't do those things. But people do that because they have the comfort of it being a video game and there's no repercussions. And then they, you know, dumb it down. But these simulators have been around forever. I mean, you can go back 40 years and probably find one for the old IBMs. But okay, sure. My Life Above the Clouds. You can find the book on Amazon. Alan Bullitt Campbell, retired now, but was in the U.S. Air Force and was an airplane captain with Delta Airlines for 37 years. Thank you for joining us and talking about your experiences and breaking down what's going on here.
Thanks, Ryan. That was a pleasure.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Having some fun in between the breaks there. I said, hey, producer Ethan, have you seen the movie Airplane? He said, no. I said, hey, you should definitely watch it. He goes, okay, I'll do that. And then immediately said, I'm not going to do that. And I knew you weren't going to do it. That's one of those false promises. You give people the thought that you're going to enjoy this movie, and they're doing it for your benefit, but you're going to completely blow it off.
The best part about that is as soon as I said, okay, you said, you're not going to do that. And then I said, yeah, you didn't hear this, but I turned off the talkback. That's how Ryan and I communicate during breaks. And I had turned it off and said to Sue, I'm definitely not going to do that.
Well, they're remaking the Naked Gun movie. I think it comes out here in a couple of weeks. It's in the matter of a month. And I love the old Leslie Nielsen movies. Even O.J. Simpson was fantastic in those classic Naked Gun movies. And each one was funny. I just rewatched the series, 1, 2, and 3. The first one's great. Second one's very good. Third one's just good. But there's so many moments in there. You just get me laughing out loud. And I don't watch movies today where I laugh out loud like that anymore. Yeah. It's been so long. In Sue, Airplane, I had to ask the pilot, was it like when Airplane comes out? Because, you know, WKRP in Cincinnati was out and, you know, people in radio thought, oh, this is so cool. I'm Johnny Fever or I'm Venus Flytrap or I'm Les Nessman. And when Airplane comes out, I thought, if you're an airline pilot, that's how people are going to look at you. I thought this would be looked at as a negative in your industry, but apparently he liked it.
I think it's because everybody got the joke. I mean, it was so exaggerated. There's no way you thought that's what pilots are like.
And there's so many great lines to it.
Yes.
And there's so many great gags to it. It's definitely worth it, even though Ethan will never see it in his entire life.
Nope.
And he'll just miss out on it.
Listen, between the two shows that I work on, and Jackie said it on here in the comments on the YouTube stream, she understands it. Says, Ethan was honest, and his list has grown quite long. The list of movies I'm supposed to watch between the two shows that I work with has grown. I mean, it's grown to like Santa Claus checking his list length. It's that long.
Yeah. I will say, in our defense, we're right.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're not.
Yeah.
Well,
it's there's a lot of greatness that happened before the year 2000. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yes.
I'm just saying it's gotten a little bit overwhelming to the point where, you know how sometimes a task is just too big don't even want to start on it? That's where I'm at, Sue.
Well, here's the thing. You have watched some of the stuff that, he's seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, love it.
He's seen the classics like that. But he hasn't seen like things like Die Hard.
Oh, Die Hard's so
Die
good.
Nope.
See? And that's what we're trying to push him toward. You understand.
All right. Well, what if we had like a 4-day work week? Would you use that fifth day to go watch movies?
I'm just going to be honest. No, I would not.
Oh, Ethan, what do you do when you're watching Big Brother after? What do you watch when you get off of work? Do you watch anything on a TV?
Right now, I am watching the new season of Quarterback on Netflix, and it is phenomenal. But I don't know. Normally, I feel like I watch sports most of the time.
Okay, you don't have to watch a movie in one sitting. I rarely watch a movie in one sitting.
It's because
anymore.
You have kids. It's because you have kids.
I can't stay up that late. So by the time the kids are in bed, it's like, do I want to stay up till 10:30 watching a movie? No, thank you. I'll watch half and half. And that is just fine with me. Maybe that's what you have to do, is you have to break it up a little bit.
Maybe I have to be more disciplined then, because usually I'm the kind of person like, all right, once I start it, if I'm starting something late, it can't be long because I know I have to finish it. So maybe I just need to have more discipline.
Hey, what's your thoughts on George Clooney? You like him?
George Clooney. I'm trying to think of what I've seen him in. I just watched all of the Ocean's movies not that long ago. I really enjoyed those.
Oh, that's good.
I did like those. I'm trying to think of what all he's in that I wouldn't even know.
Just on a side note, you know who hates George Clooney is Hunter Biden. So you're not on the same page with him. Maybe we got time. Can you play clip 4 real quick? We have that.
Have to do with anything. Why do I have to listen to you? What right do you have to step on a man who's given 52 years of his life to the service of this country and decide that you, George Clooney, are going to take out basically a full page ad in the New York Times to undermine the president?
Sounds a little upset with George Clooney, I would say. That's Hunter Biden ripping George Clooney because he said something not too nice about his dad, Joe Biden. Okay, well, I guess not everyone agrees. Maybe George Clooney is also like you. He's too busy. Hunter Biden's too busy doing his whatever Hunter Biden does. And he doesn't have time to watch movies like Airplane either. So
I guess so. Gravity. I liked Gravity a lot with him and Sandra Bullock. Let's see.
Just in it briefly, just real quickly, wasn't he?
Yeah, at the beginning, like he was. I think he died. Sorry to spoil it. It's 12 years old. I'm not,
oh, come really on care. Now.
Oh, all Brother, right. Where Art Thou? That was a fun one.
Good. That was great.
I guess ER was kind of his claim to fame, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, coming up after the break, we saw the news. Ozzy Osbourne passed away today. And we're going to talk to former Keishi DJ Randy Rayleigh coming up after the break about Ozzy Osbourne. And I'm going to request that Randy does the entire interview in an Ozzy impersonation. We'll see how that goes. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.